Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.
You would be indeed.
And you would.
Yes.
Gorgeous
and I'm Michael
day.
Sterling. Who
you are. You are. You're Michael Sterling, and I am a dangerously reasonable facsimile.
Oh, yes. Well.
Yeah. Gorgeous day out.
I know.
Autumnal. That's
I know.
The word.
A word not used
enough, don't you think? Autumnal?
Yeah, probably.
You know? Have you ever used autumnal?
Not again on this show, either. So. No, I always related that to something that was sci-fi when you say that word.
Autumnal?
Yes, and yet it's not.
Do I say it enough that it's like a
you
signature
do.
Word for me?
Kinda,
do I go?
Sort
oh,
of.
So
when
I'm
we get into this time of year, yeah.
I'm a little foppish, is what you're saying.
Well,
I'm a little
well,
affected.
Well, you said that. I didn't say that, but oh, but you know, I love this kind of weather. But I love the fact that we had cold weather this past week.
I know,
and rain.
I know. Yeah,
I mean, you know, we're in a serious situation.
Yeah, but you know what I found, or I didn't find, but learned, rain down here doesn't really help us. It's rain in Northern California that we need.
Oh?
Yeah. For our reservoirs and all that.
Oh, really?
Because when Mulholland, you know, created the aqueduct and did all that and basically turned three towns in Northern California into ghost towns so we could have water down here. I'm not bitter about that. anyway.
Well, so they should get the rain then. I mean, they usually get more of it than
hopefully,
we do.
Right? Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's thank the sponsor, shall we?
Yes, absolutely. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Yes, we are. Two strangers find themselves trapped together in the elevator of a deserted high-rise building late at night. Their worlds are turned upside down in a desperate struggle against the raw, primal animal that lives just below the surface in all of us.
Written by Dermot Davis. I hope I have his pronunciation right, but I will be shortly corrected by our guests if I do not. Written by and directed by Tim Byron Owen. Caged is a world premiere now playing at Theater Banshee. We actually have the entire cast with us in studio today. Very excited about that. Please welcome Elizabeth Landy and Johnny O'Callaghan.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
So good to have you.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming. We're very, very excited about having you here. Did I get the author's name correct?
You did, yes.
I did.
Yes.
And it's Elizabeth Landy, which I found out and I inquired about. And Johnny O'Callaghan, you're easy to... you're easy, Johnny.
I'm very easy.
You're easy.
That's what we heard.
Johnny O'Callaghan.
Well, very excited about talking to the two of you about the show. I saw it this weekend and I loved it. I'm really excited to... I think the LA Times said a yeoman effort. Is that how you say it? Yeoman?
Yeoman.
Or Ottoman.
Or Ottoman, yes.
Or Ottoman.
But before we talk to them, how was your week,
you
Michael?
Know what? Speaking of theater, I too went to the opening of a new pop rock musical at the Pasadena Playhouse called Breaking Through.
Okay. And oh, that's the one that Nita Whittaker is in.
Nita Whittaker.
Guest of our show quite often.
Yes, yeah. Yes, indeed, and who will be headlining for me coming up in the new year. And also Will Collier, who is a guest of this show a few times, a wonderful
yeah, a
actor.
Times.
And, you know, I so respect the Pasadena Playhouse, and I appreciate the fact that they bring in a lot of world premiere projects. And Sheldon Epps, who is certainly a friend, you know, kind of caresses these things and becomes involved as artistic director, which he is there, right. But also as a director to some degree. Every once in a while, one of those world premieres just doesn't have the gas it needs.
Really?
And this is one of them.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
That's really saying something, given the cast.
Yes.
Because very strong cast.
And the actors are not the problem. It's the book is the mm-hmm. problem, and they don't the actors succeed at making the best of the book as possible, but beyond that they fail because they have nowhere else to go with it.
Huh.
And musically, it's a pretty sound show. It's a pop show, but it was one of those nights where everybody in the audience was somehow, you know, connected to the project, and all of the guests invited were connected to the people who were connected to the project. And
little home team crowd.
Nobody talked about it at intermission.
Yeah, that's telling.
And you know that they, that's but what it is, in, to be supportive, is that it has good a good opportunity. It has legs. It can be changed, and that's part of the process, of course. And
sure, yeah.
I hope for their sake, because they put a great deal of money into this, that that happens for them.
Oh. Well, it's nice to know that there's workable clay there.
Right, exactly. You know? But when Will Collier took the stage, or Nita Whitaker took the stage, you were seeing people in who because they have so much experience in this area, were kind of, you kind of took a nice breath and said, oh, okay,
right.
Okay, at least for a few minutes until it got back to where it was.
You know, Michael, I don't think I told you, but I actually was supposed to do this production.
Oh, really?
And I had a conflict.
That's a musical. You know, dancing, singing, everything.
Yeah,
what was the problem?
I can't sing or dance.
I see.
Oh, look at the time. Oh, wow. Okay.
My. This is what you learned.
This is what you get. Michael, you know what? We have so much to talk about today that I'm going to jump right into it. My week was fine and fairly uneventful, so I won't bore the listeners with that. Would you please introduce the lovely lady to your left?
I'd be so happy to. Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, attended the University of Texas at Austin on a Morton Brown scholarship in acting and received her MFA from Yale. The School of Drama at Yale. Some of her favorite roles have included Jenny in Remembrance, Helena in Kin, and Pam in American Wee Pie at Theater 40, Phoebe in As You Like It at the Yale Repertory Theater, and she works works by Maria Irene Fornes. Am I saying that right? Fornes at the Trinity Rep. Immediately after her current run in Cage, she will spend December in Peru working on a film with Peruvian actor Marco Zanino and director Carlos
Cirliza.
I always throw Mike. This is an inside joke. I always throw Michael the difficult pronunciation.
Yes, indeed. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Elizabeth Landon.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So I'm very good. I'm very good. So this journey, this journey that is Caged, how did you hear about it? When did you know it's something that you wanted to be involved with? Had you worked with the writer or the director before or both? Tell us how it all came about.
Maybe close to a year ago, Tim, who's the director, had told me about this play that he had been working on with his group. For a number of years.
Okay.
I met Tim, I guess, 3 years ago when Johnny and I did Remembrance, which was an Irish play.
And was that at Banshee, too?
No, actually, that was at Theater 40.
Oh, okay.
And that was,
that's the Theater 40 is the one in Beverly Hills that's sort of part of that school?
It is.
Right. Great space.
And it's a great space, and it's a really great group of people.
Yeah.
But that's how I knew Tim. And so maybe a year ago he came to me and he gave me one of the scripts. There have been several adaptions of this script that we now have. And I just thought it was really a very interesting play, like a roller coaster ride.
Right.
You know, not a lot of not expected twists and turns, depth, different. And interesting, and that's why.
It is all of those things. And I have to say, though, one of the things that impressed me so much about it, having, as we talked before we went on the air, doing solo shows or one-person shows and something like this, which is the very definition of the two-hander. And not just because it's just two actors, but you're two people, you're stuck in an elevator, and you're in that space for the 90 minutes. I mean, what sort of specific challenges does that present? Specific challenges to you as an actor, and is it something that you really prepare for, or is it just like I'm approaching the role like I'm approaching any other role? Do you think much about the fact that you are on stage the whole time, that you don't leave as soon as you get out there? What's your pre-stage process like, if you want to share it?
sure. Actually, a lot of
you never leave the stage?
No, neither one of us ever leave the stage.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. It's a very small space. I think it's no larger than maybe 6x6 or something like that.
It's like a large, elevator, it's like it would be in a big office building, one of the larger ones. Yeah,
and there are no walls, so you can't lean against something if you're tired, right? Because there are sight lines, and the audience has to see you. Yeah. So you know, there's stamina that's involved. It's also a fairly physical play. Yep. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a lot of physicality in it. You can't sort of sneak out to the wings for a glass of water, so your mouth does get somewhat dry after 90 minutes. I think just a certain amount of focus that you have from having been an actor and done plays, and you just hone it a little bit more, I think, for the play. I personally take a nap. In the afternoon.
Oh, really?
That you meant during the show.
It's a very luxurious elevator. There's a settee and everything.
And then physically, there's parts where I don't have all of my clothes on. And so I actually went to the gym and told my trainer, look, you got to help me with this because I don't want to be embarrassed.
Right.
So, yeah, those are the things I did.
You know, it's interesting because... one of the things that happens, and I'm sure, I don't know if you both feel this way. I can't imagine that you wouldn't because of how the show crackles. But the time must fly for the two of you. I mean, just really must, because there's no downtime. I mean, you're literally going the whole time. I mean, 90 minutes must seem like 30 to you.
I'd say, yeah, that's true. But, you know, I was thinking about it the other day. It does feel quick. But I think that's because the only way, I don't know about Johnny, but for me, the only way to approach this 90-minute play is truly moment by moment.
Right.
So every moment is like everything, you know?
Right.
And it sort of, fortunately because of the words, it takes you along the road.
Right.
But there are times when we're at a certain place and I'm like, oh my God, we already got here.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, okay, got to focus again, you know, and so you just really have to hone in and be focused in every little moment, because otherwise, I don't know how you get for 90 minutes in a tiny little space.
Right. You find that when you rehearsed it, did you work on very, very small isolated pieces independent, or did the director break them up, or did you just work textually like, oh, let's do 5 pages today or 7 pages today? Was it broken up by theatrical beats or textual beats when you guys worked on it?
Actually, I think more textual beats, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think not until we really got into it did we start to break it down and work on specific moments that needed to be worked on. But I think we approached it, from what I recall, just, you know, start at the beginning and go through.
Right.
And, you know, figure it out.
Right.
I think it was just a lot of just jumping in and figuring it out.
Elizabeth, have you, in your real life, have you ever been stuck in an elevator?
No. Thank God.
Yeah. It's an experience.
Have you?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
For how long?
Not very long, but unfortunately, because I suffered from anxiety for many, many years, and it came out of the blue, and there was no particular reason.
Yeah.
And you too,
yes.
Yeah. And, you know, it's paralyzing for the person that's going through it, and very hard to understand for someone who's not or who's never had that experience before. And it could be on any level. It could be in an elevator. It could be in a crowded shopping mall. It could be on an airplane. It could be in your car. I mean, you know. Well, but the very fact that you – I was asking because I thought maybe if you had, you would be calling upon that and using it in this show.
You know, I think that – I mean, I've certainly had anxiety attacks in my life.
Right.
Not stuck in an elevator. I think once I was up on a mountain and I had to go skiing and there was a snowstorm and I was terrified. But I think you just...
It's just as bad.
You know, you just take that feeling of what anxiety means to you and use it.
Yeah.
What about you, Johnny? Ever stuck in an elevator?
No, but I'm getting excited. I know what could happen now.
Oh.
Might be fun. With the right person, of course.
When I had, not to go off into an anxiety tangent, but one of the interesting thing about the show, and I too do not want to give anything away about the show in terms of what is revealed or whatever. But interestingly enough, I think this is important for our listeners to know in preparing to go see it. It's not really about that fear as much as the relationship and the interaction between these two.
Oh, undoubtedly, yeah.
As, you know, because that would be certainly a hard thing to sustain. And right. But I, you know, it was funny. When I had my anxiety attacks, I didn't need any catalyst or anything. I didn't need an elevator. I didn't need ski slopes. I didn't need anything. It just, the very definition of panic attack for me, back when I used to have them, the best way I ever heard it put was, okay, you're reacting like you're tied to a train track and the train is coming, but there's no train and there's no track and you're sitting at dinner in a restaurant and your body is reacting as though all those things are happening. It certainly...
Yeah, and certainly when I had sex in an elevator, I wasn't thinking about...
When you had sex... Yeah. Well, if I had a nickel, you know...
Like the Mylar Club, right?
Mile high.
Yeah, mile high. Yeah.
First floor, ladies lingerie. Second floor, ladies lingerie. Third
the
floor,
elevator lingerie. Club.
Yeah. So now the you said that you've worked with Tim Byron Owen. Is that the name of the director? You worked with him before on other projects?
On a play called Remembrance.
On Remembrance that you mentioned. That was the only one that the two of you did?
Yes. Together.
Yes.
Yes.
Questions get harder as we continue, Johnny.
They
you
do,
okay there?
I'm
you really weighed that answer.
I'm afraid.
Is there something we should know?
No, I'm afraid to answer. It's not my turn.
No, please. It's everybody's turn. That's how we play it here.
Yeah. That's how we roll here.
Though Tim begs me a lot to work with him, but I finally gave in for this show.
Only because of me.
Only because of Elizabeth.
Okay. Are you your friends prior to working with each other?
Well,
you
we became friends during Remembrance. Yeah. At the show. That was when we first met.
Yes.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And wearing your producer hat, how do you like that? Do you, is it a bit of a juggling match being producer actor or
no?
Really?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm just a small one of the producers, so I
leave it to
the other ones to do the work.
Really?
I mean, I help organize, but then I step away.
You have to sort of, especially leading up to about two to three weeks out, it's just like, you know what, I have to put the energies on the stage.
That's pretty much what happened. I started and helped people put it together, and then I said, okay, goodbye.
Right. And this thing that you're leaving town for, this film you have coming up, can you tell us a little about that? Or
it sounds interesting. Yeah.
I don't know that Carlos would want me to say too much, but it's very interesting. It's a journey. A woman goes to Peru.
You're on a Peruvian elevator.
Yeah, everything's about an elevator in my life. No, that would be funny, though. She goes to Peru for to figure something out. And she has an interesting journey along the way. And I think it's very sexual, I think, in places. I think Carlos is okay with me saying that. He's the writer, also director. I'm excited. Marcos is a really well-established Peruvian actor, and I'm excited to work with him.
And how did this come about? Yeah. Just audition for it?
Actually, Carlos is he's a very good young filmmaker. He did his first feature. Maybe he finished it 2 years ago, and it's been doing very well. It was it's done really well at the film festivals. The one in Korea, the really big one in Korea, just escaping my mind right now. But it's like the Cannes of Korea. So it was there, and then it was.
It would be Cannes with a K.
Yeah, exactly right. And then another really big one in Guadalajara, and he won the jury award for best written screenplay at Outfest, which is a very large film festival
in
Los Angeles.
And that's and Outfest is sort of a gay and lesbian themed.
The film that he did was and we had met, and he had asked me to go and come and just do a small part in that film.
Okay.
And so I did that. I guess we filmed it 2.5 or so years ago. And then he came up to me not too long ago, and he said, "Hey, I want to do a film. I want you to be one of the leads in it. And this is what I'm thinking about." And I said, that's really exciting and great.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever been to Peru?
Before? No, and I really want to go to Machu Picchu. I'm dying to go to Machu Picchu.
It's a pretty spectacular
I'm
country.
Really excited to go. Yeah.
What brought you there, Michael?
You know, I was on tour with part of my foundation of what I do is public relations, and I've handled, fortunately, many successful people in the past, but Andy Gibb, if you remember Andy, was on tour. And we were on tour in the United States, and then we were able to include an invitation from from South America to go to a huge music festival that was actually not in Peru, but we had to go through Peru to get to where we were going, which was Chile, Santiago, Chile.
Oh, okay.
And they have a big world music festival there, which he was headlining. So the whole experience of being in South America was totally interesting, you know.
Yeah.
And a little scary. Yeah. We were there as guests of the government, so we were kind of
carried around on a velvet pillow.
Well, yeah, a little.
I won't go anywhere unless I'm a guest of the government. Often I've been a guest of the government and not by my own choice.
I say that only because, you know, South America is corrupt in many places.
Depending on where you are, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I just remember sitting in the cockpit of the plane. This was one of the perks of being with Andy, because we were invited in the cockpit. And we flew into the horizon when the sun was coming up.
Wow.
And it was the most I'd never been, and it was a 747 airplane.
Oh, so it wasn't like a little Cessna. This was an airliner. Okay.
Yeah. Oh. But to have that invitation was phenomenal, and then to actually sit there and with the pilots and fly at that particular time of day when everything was changing was
glorious.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a pretty exciting way to arrive there.
I feel somewhat. Well, I took the bus in Indiana once, and I tell you, with the sun coming up, it was magical.
Like nothing else, eh?
You know,
it's not like
Ohio
Indiana or
sunrise.
Any of those
nothing
other states.
Like that.
I figured that.
This is the difference in our lives, Michael. This is what you do, and
I'm
home cleaning my grout. Elizabeth, the first film that you did with this particular director, was that a feature too? Was that a short?
No, that was a feature. That was his first feature.
Okay, and just
how did you meet?
We met at Outfest, actually. I went to a short screening because I wanted to see what the filmmakers were doing. And it's a funny story. It was at the DGA. And
Directors Guild of America.
Directors Guild of America. Yes. And it was in one of their smaller spaces. I think it was DGA 2, the theater number 2. And it wasn't very crowded at all because I had something called an outpass. Which gets you in early. So I was in early, and he was just this nice-looking guy, and I thought, I'm going
to
sit next to him.
So even though they were
like, but you think I was, but I wasn't. I just thought he was a nice guy. And so I sat next to him, and I think he thought, what are you doing? But then we just started talking, and we ended up hitting it off really well, and he's now one of my very best friends, and I adore him, and
that's wonderful.
And, yeah, it's just, you know, funny synchronicity.
Something. You know, I mean, and that's what we have a lot of actors that listen to our show, a lot of experienced actors and a lot of new actors. And I always like to share tales like that because these people, you know, there's such a thing as passive networking. And passive networking are just going to places and opening yourself up for new experiences. You don't always – everything doesn't have to be, you know, blasted out on social media. Everything doesn't have to be this. Just go. Experience art. Mm-hmm. Be there and see what happens from doing stuff like this, which is – thank you for sharing that tale.
Oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the listeners do too. I just realized, Michael, we have not told people how to get tickets for this show. Would you do that? And I have a little surprise too
after you
throw that information out there.
Absolutely. Well, the show again that we are talking about today with with the stars of the show is Caged, and that is a world premiere drama. It is in progress through new dates here. I see October 22nd through November 22nd.
Correct.
And the previews are coming up. October. I'm sorry.
No, they already happened.
They already happened.
Yeah.
And admission is one of those wonderful, wonderfully priced tickets at $20. And it is available at brownpapertickets.com or by calling 800-838-3006.
And also, if you want to see...
The location is at Theater Banshee, which is here in the San Fernando Valley at 1435 West Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank.
And if you don't want to sift through all the stuff at brownpapertickets.com, because there's a lot of content there, caged.brownpapertickets.com will take you there. And also, I love Theater Banshee. They do phenomenal work. I always see shows there when they're. But we should stress that this is an independent production that's at Theater Banshee. It's not a Theater Banshee production. I always like to tell, I always feel like producers always get shortchanged. These people that produce these shows, so they immediately think, oh, it's at Theater Banshee. Theater Banshee's doing it. And it's certainly as good as anything I've seen at Theater Banshee, so I don't want to say that to separate anything, but I always like to. I care for producers. I don't know why. Maybe because I am one or have been one. We have tickets for this. We have two tickets for this production.
That's cool.
And we're going to ask our listeners for the seventh person to email us. We'll count our emails. StateOfTheArtsLA@gmail.com. That's StateOfTheArtsLA@gmail.com. The seventh email that we receive, we will email you back, and we will give you two tickets for this production sometime between now and November 22nd, and I can guarantee a very, very enjoyable evening. We should pay the bills very quickly, Michael, with our arts calendar, and then we'll talk to this gentleman to my right.
And
here
before
so
we do that, can I just go back to what we talked about at the beginning of the hour with the Pasadena Playhouse and Breaking Through? I never really said what the show was about in a nutshell. It is about the music industry and this young woman whose mother was a very famous singer. Who unfortunately died because of being involved in too much of the things that come to various people in the music industry and pills and you know, drinking and all that kind of thing. So it's a sensitive musical in that state, and this young lady's trying to have a career and that's pretty much called Breaking Through, which is breaking through all of those kinds of situations.
Oh, so
that's
okay.
That's the story there.
Oh, good. Good. All right. Speaking of musicals, the smash Broadway hit based on Green Day's multi-platinum Grammy Award-winning album of the same name, American Idiot, tells the story of three lifelong friends who are forced to choose between their dreams and the safety of suburbia. Now, director Marco Gomez, musical director Chris Raymond, and choreographer Angela Todaro bring this explosive, iconic story to the Doma stage at the Met Theater. Songs include chart toppers like Boulevard of Broken Dreams, 21 Guns, Wake Me Up When September Ends, Holiday, and the blockbuster title track, American Idiot.
Doma has created a reputation for bringing large-scale musicals to the small, intimate stage at Hollywood's Met Theater. And with American Idiot, Doma continues that tradition, offering up a 25-member ensemble and live band. The musical version of one of the best-selling albums of all time burst onto Broadway in 2010, rocking the St. James Theater for more than a year. American Idiot is presented by Doma Theater Company at the Met Theater, and that is located at 1089 North Oxford Avenue in Hollywood, playing through this weekend only. So tickets are still available. You need to get them by calling 323-802-9181 or visiting Doma, D-O-M-A, Theater, and that is R-E at the end of that word, .com, domatheater.com.
What's protocol on that, theater or theater?
Well, one is referring to the building, and the other is to the art.
That's what I always thought. If ER is the building, RE is the art form.
Yeah.
I should know this at 51, don't you think?
Is that all you are, 51?
Oh, look at the time. Okay. Our next guest, one-man show, Who's Your Daddy?, chronicling the adoption of his Ugandan son, has played to sold-out houses in L.A., New York, Edinburgh, and Toronto. He has played the role of Stephen Dedalus. Bloomsday on Broadway, the North American premiere of Conor McPherson's Rum and Vodka, followed in New York, L.A., and Toronto, leading to recordings with NBC and HBO. He joined the sci-fi world by recurring as Neum on the TV series Stargate Atlantis. Other film and TV credits include We Were the Mulvaneys, CBS The Agency, and the independent hit Clutch. He shares the very confining boards with our first guest in the world premiere of Cage, playing through November 22nd at Theater Banshee. Please welcome Johnny O'Callaghan.
Hello.
I hit the wrong button there, Johnny. I can't deceive people. I just can't deceive people. How are you?
I'm very, very good.
We appreciate you being here. So I got to want to jump into something. You've done a one-person show. I've done a one-person show. Here you're doing a two-person show. Is it like a lifeline having that other person there? Because there are few things as terrifying as the solo show, I think. And is it just so...
It's so much more fun having someone else
it is, isn't
on
it?
Stage. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest... A lot of it is cardio, I find. I found, like, training, working out, like, running was great, you know, to preparation for a one-man show. And it's, I think it's the same with a two-hander. But it's much more fun to have someone to bounce off because you just don't know... what's going to come out of either of us, our mouths, hopefully the lines. But with a one-man show, you know, it's a different beast. But there's similarities, too.
Well, yeah, especially with something like this, which is just, you know, just the two. You're still very, very responsible for the evening. You know, there's only two of us that are providing the evening for this theater full of people.
You know. It is. But that's what sort of, you know, just listening to each other, like so much stuff goes wrong every show, which is also, it keeps you on your toes. It's the same with doing a one-person show.
Sure.
Can you clarify what you mean by that?
Well, just, you know, lines come out a little
One time the elevator moved. The elevator actually was working, so it really threw them.
It's live theater, right? You're so in the moment. You know, the intonation of how a line comes out, too, can affect how you respond. And that's the great thing about doing a two-hander, because you're affected every moment.
Right.
It's not just with a one-person show. It's all you. So you're really, you know, bringing everyone on the journey.
Right.
But this, people said to me, it doesn't matter how many people are in the audience. And I'm just in this elevator. I have no idea who's listening. It's very different. Like, with a one-person show, I'm so aware of the audience. This is so, I'm in this little box.
Right, but you're also, and it's not a direct address show. Like, one-person shows are direct address, so you have to engage those people.
Yes,
but I never thought about that. Your fourth wall is very small in this show, and it's not even a wall, it's a door.
Well, there's sort of, someone said they came and they liked that, how it wasn't a preachy show at all, that there wasn't a real sense of monologues, although there are monologues in it, but it's a sense of that we're talking to each other.
Right.
We're trying to impact each other, which is wonderful to do and very like life.
And also the music of the two of you, like, I'm sure that, you know, like I juggle, mm-hmm, and I juggle, mm-hmm, I pass clubs with people. And
wonderful.
When you get into that rhythm and that musicality of that action, you find yourself doing things like a club that has left my hand at the same time that the club has left his hand will already overcompensate for a deficiency that I'm getting in my other hand. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing synchronicity, mm-hmm, where your two people are thinking, mm-hmm, as one. Do you find yourself that it is sort of like playing music with Elizabeth?
I do,
in this?
Yeah. And you notice the notes, when the notes aren't hit, you can feel it as well. No, it feels like a symphony of playing, making sure I'm playing all the notes. And because it's set up, Tim Reilly, the director, who's wonderful, he really set it up with giving us certain notes to play.
Right.
You know, the heightened, say, of the Ruth character, like that she's so ballsy and so tough.
Right.
And then there's this sort of, like, the character that I play is much more laid back at the beginning. You know what I mean? So there's a huge arc within the piece, which is wonderful to play.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, did the director, was he one of those kinds of directors that gave you kind of full license to bring on, excuse me, your takes of these characters as opposed to directing you?
I think he directs. I mean, he does. He's not like, you know, it's not totally just, like, I've worked with many different directors. He is pretty hands-on, as in he's very specific about what he's looking for, but not in the sense of a line read,
just as in
the sense of the tone and the notes, the sort of the levels.
A little give and take. And,
which is, he's very good, actually. He's very good with actors because he's been an actor himself. So he's actually
Well, that's good.
Wonderful.
Because all directors are not necessarily good with actors. And I think it reflects in the ultimate product, but
That lack of awareness. Yeah. Did the playwright weigh in at any point during the process? Is he local? Was he here? Or
no, he came for opening. I thought, I've been a playwright as, and I wrote Who's Your Daddy? And I know we kept changing it till the very last minute, and we changed in previews. But he came to opening. If I was the playwright, I probably would have been there for every rehearsal.
Yeah.
So he was very laid back and like, oh, here's the play, just do it.
But do you think that's because you are, I mean, would you... I don't want to speak for you, but would you call yourself an actor before you would call yourself a playwright?
I would, yes.
Okay, so do you think maybe that your need to be there is because you wear the actor hat more?
Probably. I guess I really feel dialogue, not to sound sort of, but I feel the truth of, I feel it in my body. I feel what's real dialogue, right. Very, very just instinctively. And I see how I write notes that don't work in myself,
right.
And I kind of have to test them with an audience to keep, refining. So it's just different approaches. His approach is very valid too. It was just interesting to kind of go, here you go.
Yeah, no, I think I would be the same way because you're handing over your baby.
Yeah,
depending on how much you you like that particular child.
So, here you go. Yes.
But that said, I understand what you're saying. But that said, when the playwright is in the room and the director is directing, it also can inhibit the director, I think.
Yeah, no. I mean, sure. I think that, anyone, even if a author had or playwright had issues, the place for that is not the rehearsal anyway.
Right.
Talk to the director afterwards or whatever. But, some directors welcome that.
Yeah, I guess it's an individual thing. Sure.
My friend Ted did, Ted Coach, great actor that I went to college with in upstate New York, and he did the revival with Brian Dennehy of Death of a Salesman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Arthur Miller was still around when that opened on Broadway, and Arthur Miller was changing it. Like, right up, and not modernizing it, not like saying, okay, let's add an iPad here or something like that. It wasn't changing, but just changing phrasing and things. It's just like one of the greatest plays in history.
But
and
don't
you're
you find
tweaking it.
You've written too, though. It's like sculpting that you're always like trying to.
It is,
like,
but
it's like editing. But
yeah, but you sculpt too much, the nose falls
can,
off.
You
know,
well, bringing up Michael Jackson. Yeah. But yeah, there's a sense of
now.
Not anymore. But a sense of, I find it's like sculpting. It is so much editing. So I can understand why he did that too. But
did you find the editing process? Like, I hate writing. I write,
sure.
And I like having written,
yes.
But I hate the act of writing. I hate putting the clay on the table. Once the clay is on the table, I'll move it around. I love to move it around and edit.
Like, well, I'm a big meditator, so I meditate quite a bit, and I have found that's really helpful to not let the body, like my body doesn't, I hear my body going, screaming, like it doesn't want to sit down, or my mind is saying, oh, don't write. But luckily with meditation, you transcend your thoughts in a way, and you just sit down anyway and write. You sort of learn how to get out of your own way.
Yeah.
And that's what I found, sort of, I have to get out of my own way to write.
Yeah.
Even I noticed this morning going to the gym, my body didn't want to go to the gym. My mind was saying, stay in bed. But I know that I feel good when I, do a spin class. So I think writing is similar. You feel much better after you get it out of it.
You do. And if you're going to call yourself that craft, you have to, Leonard Cohen once said, if you're going to call yourself a writer, you got to go to work every day.
Yes.
And it's too easy not to,
Mm-hmm.
They asked Kurosawa once why he made movies. He said, why do you make movies? He said, why do you film movies? He said, so I have something to edit. Because he just that's the creative process. To getting the stuff in the lens is one thing, but the putting it together is really the silence between the notes.
It's interesting. Who's Your Daddy got optioned for a movie. So for the last year and a half, they actually hired me to be the screenwriter, and that's a whole other thing. Working with producers, like giving you notes on a screenplay, as opposed to being a playwright, there's so much freedom.
Oh yeah,
following but working with producers, I was like, oh my god.
And how do you receive that information? Are you a gentleman about that, or do you just kind of bite your tongue? And
I have to say, it's probably the most difficult process the last year and a half working on that movie script, which surprised me. I wasn't expecting. It's interesting to take a play to a movie too, because a lot of them, you get a lot of cut it, not funny, cut it, not funny, cut it, and you're like, but they were the funniest lines in the play.
Yeah,
they were the funniest moments. And so it's definitely been an interesting process. Again, I think, the world for meditation, just to stay present with it, not to kind of get in my own way. Because it does trigger you, of course, because there's part of you that wants to go.
Yeah.
But you just sort of breathe and and listen and sort of it's like more of a collaboration, I guess, than sort of writing Who's Your Daddy.
Because there's far more people between you and that audience. Yeah. I also love the evaluation of spoken comedy as written comedy. It's one of my favorite things. They're just seeing something on a page goes, oh no, that's not funny.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Yes,
I
mean, it is. It's just that.
Lenny exactly. But were those notes given to you just on the read by the producer? By the producers?
Yeah.
So they'd never.
They'd never actually. No, I mean they're wonderful producers, and they've created some great movies. And it's interesting how movies are made. They read them and go, oh, not funny.
Yeah.
Not funny.
Well, because it's so subjective. It's
so much like when Lenny Bruce got arrested, and they had they would read transcripts of his stand-up act in the courtroom. And he would just say, I'm going to go to jail because the bailiff has shitty timing. Just read it like completely dry, no inflection. And of course, the only thing that jumps off the page is the F words and all the other stuff. And just like, that's not but how it's delivered.
It does make you fight for stuff, though, too. It does teach you in a way to really own yourself and put boundaries and limits. Mm-hmm. Like you do have to step up. I think also being a parent, I've learned to really step up as a... as a man, that you have to deal with teachers and step up. You can't just... Sometimes being an actor in L.A., I was just so much more easygoing about everything. Just so nonchalant. I would do three things in a day, and one of them was lunch, and it was a crazy day. That was my life for it. So it's been a very interesting, being a parent and also working with producers and being hired to write. I guess it's a different process, too, right? When money's involved. As a playwright, you're... Kind of, it's a passion,
right?
But you feel
it more like you're punching a clock with this one.
Well, I feel it's a collaboration. It's not quite as
mechanical as that,
as how I would have imagined. But I can't wait to see it on the movie screen.
And where does it stand now? Do you have a final draft to them?
We have a final draft, and they finally love it. So we have a draft that's going out to directors as we speak.
That's
wonderful. So it'll be exciting to see. Yeah.
Did you have agency representation with this?
I did, and kind of we negotiated a lot. Everything. I don't mean to be negative. The process was just more interesting and different than being a playwright. And
congratulations on that.
That's great. Yeah. Is it going to retain the title? Or?
Yes, right now it's still Who's Your Daddy?
Okay, I only say that so that listeners can know what to look for in 2016 or 2017.
Yes. Wasn't that a Telly Savalas line? Well, didn't he used to use that line?
No. Telly Savalas was Who Loves You, Baby?
That's right.
Useless shit stuck in my head.
With the lollipop.
I can't remember. Who Loves You, Baby?
That's right.
I can't believe that I can actually recall this.
I knew you'd know. Why did I know that?
Because I know nothing of any importance. We are talking to the two stars of Caged. This is playing at Theater Banshee. It plays through November 22nd. You can get tickets for it at caged.brownpapertickets.com or by calling 800-838-3006. And Theater Banshee, as one might know, is 3435 West Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank. And this is one of the great areas in town. And we always like to stress this when we're talking about theater in LA. You park once and you have all of these dining options you can walk to. You got Porto's on one end of the street. If you go to the other end, my favorite place in LA is the Montevecchio Pinocchio's restaurant and Montevecchio Import Company in Delhi. That's right down there. Some of the best food you can have. And it's
in that same area?
Yeah, it's just down the street.
Oh, that's...
And it's like cafeteria style. You go and it's a steam table and pastas, and it's a wonderful place. I have so many stories about just people watching in that place. Great gelato, everything's
Yeah, well, that's a
highly
lovely
recommended.
Strip in
yes, it is.
In Burbank. Yeah.
And it's that time, Michael.
It is
that time for us to baptize our two guests.
Yes. Did you prep them?
I did. Oh, okay. You have to tell us about a tale of woe.
Elizabeth is nervous.
Why do I have to go first?
No, you go first, Elizabeth, because he's been talking.
Okay.
It's your turn.
Okay. It was my last year of drama school. I was at Yale Drama School, and I was in a play at the Yale Rep. And it was a Shakespearean play. And I went up on my lines. And I ran off the stage.
What?
Just the most horrifying experience of my life. It was just... Fortunately, not the night that my agents came, thank God. When they came, I was fantastic. But that night, I wasn't. And I was like, oh, my God. I just... horrified.
Okay, now that is...
Because you can't ad-lib Shakespeare. Why not? And I can. I'm not that smart.
Well, okay, but here's the thing.
How many vowels can you say?
You can't tell. You can't not tell us what happened. You read off stage, but then something else had
to
happen.
The play had to continue.
You had to come back on stage at some point.
No, no, I didn't, actually. It was
Why not?
No, because why not? It was like the last part of what I needed to say.
Oh.
I just went off online, and I just froze, and I was like, oh, fuck, excuse me. And I just ran off the stage, that was, and I still remember, that was kind of a while ago, but I will never forget that experience. In fact, I take it every time I start rehearsing a play. I remember that moment, and I think, God damn, excuse me, I need to know my lines.
Holy cow.
You know, it's funny because, you'd really be screwed in this one because you're stuck in an elevator.
Yeah, no, you can't. It's never happened again.
Are you going to run off?
Yeah.
No, thank God.
She just starts furiously climbing the cable.
I've never, thank God, it's never happened again. It was the one time in my life. And
oh, there's a great tale of Kevin Klein, which I think we talked about once when Kevin Klein was doing Hamlet on Broadway, and the night before they opened, he went completely full-out panic attack. I am going to forget the to be or not to be speech. I'm going to go down in history as the one actor who screwed up the most famous speech in all of the Shakespeare canon. He said, opening night, didn't sleep at all, got there, got to the show, got to that point, said to be, and completely blanked on everything. He said, I forgot how to tie my shoes. I forgot everything. Paced the stage for about 45 seconds. It all came to him, continued it. And the next day, every review, the first new interpretation of the to be or not to be, they were all singing its praises because of this huge pregnant pause in the middle that was just him forgetting. So just, if you can
sell it.
But
he only got as far as to be?
Yeah, that's it. To be. And then stopped.
Wow.
I don't know, in all honesty, if that is a true story or if that is an urban legend. Mm-hmm. But I was told that story about Kevin Klein. So I don't know if it's so. So anyone who's listening, please find that out and let us know next week.
Kevin, if you're listening.
Or Kevin, if you're listening. Yeah. Well, he's right here, ladies and gentlemen.
This is
Johnny, what do you got?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know. The most embarrassing story that's just coming forward is more to do with an audition. I had an audition for, this is many years ago, in Toronto for John Woo's Once a Thief. It was a TV show at the time. And my name was called. I walked into the room. As I was walking into the room, I farted.
And what is going on with this show today?
Then I realized, though, that I hadn't just farted. I'd actually pooed my pants.
Oh, my God.
And I remember being going, oh, my God, this cannot be happening. So I did the audition, like, going, oh, my God, oh, my God. Like, and I booked it. And it was a great guest star. But I think
what was the role?
It was this, like, the bad guy, this sort of terrorist sort of guy. But I remember just being like, oh, my God, like, what has just happened? And just being, but obviously they said,
and there was nothing you could do about that.
There was nothing I could do. I didn't know whether to, like, run out, do an Elizabeth, and just walk off the stage. But it was a...
That's probably the only time where actually running off the stage would be justified.
I just sort of was like, this can't be happening. And it, anyway... Like,
so when someone someone asked you how the audition went, did you just go, oh, shitty? Thank you. Hey,
but I remember telling it at a dinner table that evening, and people were really grossed out.
You know what? I think we have found a new, most embarrassing moment, because we had somebody that was, holding that title.
Yes. Well, we have the most embarrassing and the worst thing to happen on the stage and is not or worst thing to happen in performance is not necessarily the most embarrassing.
Right.
But the worst thing that we've ever heard in how many shows now, Michael? 300?
Yeah.
300 shows? Yeah. The worst thing is a guy who had a theme park costume, one of those inflatable theme park costumes that he had to be backstage. He had to go all the way through backstage and then get on stage in an area, and it inflated around him. And it was only while he was on stage, after it all inflated, that he realized there was a live rat in the costume.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
So it's gathered at the wrists and the ankles, and he's blown up like Tweedledee.
And there's a rat.
And there's a live rat.
I love it.
In the costume with
him. Oh, my God.
And that is just... And that's actually a combination, because I'm sure that after that, he had to shit his pants. So it just... You could get the best of
both worlds.
Well,
I thought I was too young to be shitting my pants. I thought Johnny I was all ahead of me.
Little Johnny O'Callaghan.
Little Johnny O'Callaghan. Yeah. What a pleasure having both of you
yes,
on
indeed.
The show. We really appreciate you coming in.
Continued success with your careers, and we hope the rest of the run is just as successful as it has been so far.
And thank along those so lines, remember, folks, 7th, which we probably have by now, but the 7th email to stateoftheartsla@gmail.com will get 2 tickets to see Cage at Theater Banshee, written by Dermot Davis and directed by Tim Byron Owen. Michael, would you throw the ticket information out
yes,
there
I
again?
Will.
If you would
yes,
be
I
so
will.
Kind.
It
as
is,
to?
Of course, on stage through November 22nd, Theater Banshee, 3435 West Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank, and available by going to caged.brownpapertickets.com or by calling 800-838-3006.
Thank you both. What a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you,
Paul.
Thank you.
See you on the radio.
See you next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.